Thank you for tuning in to the Head Game Podcast, powered by Mindful Athlete Training, where you grab an inside look into the heads and minds of the high performer. Learn what they do and how they think to help you take control of your own head game.
On the Head Game Podcast today, we have Bailey Harris, a junior women's rower at the University of Connecticut. She's competed in both the 4- and 8-person boat. She shares about how her program almost got taken away before she even arrived. Now her and her teammates fought the school to save it. Today we talked about the head game of an elite level rower and how student athletes can really take advantage of their own mental game. Please welcome to the show, Bailey Harris. So Bailey, we got to know each other a little bit a time ago, and to share your story about, you know, your rowing experience and the things that you're facing, the challenges you're facing, and we were really inspired by your story. And I think it's important for our listeners and our audience to kind of hear the things that you're going through. So tell me a little bit about yourself in terms of, you know, how do you find yourself in rowing? You know, how do you grow up? Is that growing up in the sport? Do you discover it? How'd that come to be?
Well, I grew up being a soccer player my entire life, and that was always like everything revolved around soccer. I played it year round, and then I got to high school and soccer was only a fall sport. So I needed something to do in the spring. I tried basketball in the winter. I wasn't very good at that, like at all. So my mom goes, "Oh, there's this rowing program. It's pretty good at your school. Why don't you just give it a try? And they have winter training, so you can do that now." So I started it. And it was like the toughest workout I've ever done in my entire life. My first erg workout was a 60 minute on the erg. And I remember sitting there thinking like, I have to do this for 60 minutes. Like, I don't know if I could do that. It's a long time to do something. And then we finish and I'm sweating a whole bunch. I just got done with the best workout of my life. And I just kind of stuck with it. And then come spring season, we're racing and we're winning and it feels super good. And that adrenaline rush that I get from rowing is something that I never got from any other sport that I've done before. So I just kind of stuck with it. I got involved with recruiting websites, started talking to coaches, and that was a super exciting and fun experience for me. Mm-hmm. So I decided to just stick with it. And there's a lot of opportunity in rowing to go to the next level and have your college paid for. So it seemed like the smart decision and I enjoyed rowing. I love the feeling that you get when you race. It's just incomparable to anything else.
Yeah, athletics is always so interesting of how people get into it. And it's funny that it's like, I'll do this to try to get better to fill some time and gap. And then it ends up becoming that sport. That was similar with me. I was playing basketball and the gym coach came up to me and was like, "Hey, do you want to play volleyball?" And I was like, "Sure, it'll help me jump a little bit better for basketball," and ends up being my primary sport. So it's funny how that works out. Like, did you find yourself like naturally taking to it? Were you just naturally good, or was it something that you really had to work towards and that was part of that grind? Like, what was your perspective on that?
It was just because it's a new sport, or it was a new sport to me, and it's unlike anything else. I had no idea what the numbers on the screen meant, but I noticed that mine were different than the girls around me, and I like that. I like being able to see the people around me and being able to just immediately change it and be better and be faster. And it's fun having that competitiveness within yourself and within your team. It helps you push more. So just being able to compare myself and compare my scores and just keep getting better every time, being able to see the numbers in front of you, it makes it easier. I just really enjoy that competitive aspect.
Has that always been your mantra? Just like go out and compete? Is that, do you have siblings? Like, how does that come to be in terms of just, you know, being a competitor? Is that just something that you had? Did someone teach you that?
Well, I have 2 younger siblings. My brother is 2 years younger than me, and he's a big dude, and he plays football. So he's just like naturally good at it. And it's always been a drive for me to be like a good female athlete, just to kind of prove that girls can also be really good athletes. It's not always about the big football star. So I see my brother getting all these awards and winning all these games and just like thriving in his sport, which is fantastic. And I also wanted that for myself. And rowing was the way that I could do that. Getting medals for races or competing in these top regattas, it's a great feeling. And then also for my sister, who's a bit younger than us, I can tell that she looks up to us. She's also super competitive. So she's about to start rowing and she's like, oh, I'm going to do better than you. I'm going to go to a better school. I'm going to win more races than you. So it's nice just being able to compete with my brother and at the same time push my sister. I just think competitiveness just comes naturally in our family.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's, nothing's ever really enough. Like, you can always do more. You can always win more. You can always get that extra award.
Yeah, it's always pushing for that next element. And I like that mentality, too, that you were talking earlier about of like, okay, I can see my numbers just being different than other people. And sometimes people can get complacent with that. Like, why didn't that become complacency for you? It was like, oh, like, this is good enough. I'm beating all these people. Like, what was that drive to then be like, okay, I want to get to this next level?
Well, to a certain extent, I'm sitting next to my teammates who are super strong and they're taller than me. So their numbers are naturally just going to be better than mine. And it's always like, oh, I'm going to sit next to this girl because I want to keep up with her. I want to finish at the same time as her. So just having those teammates around me that were also able to push me, that's super helpful in just being able to push myself.
So it's more so just that engagement, right? Of like, what's allowing you to not get complacent with that push? You know, you're talking about you're competing with all these other people, right? Who might be bigger or stronger than you, but there's still this kind of gear that you have that you're trying to tap into constantly of like, no, I can match that. I can get there. I can get one more. And it's interesting to tap into. I'm just wondering more so, how do you tap into that gear more than anything? Versus like, oh, like my numbers are strong, they're good. Like, what's that gear that you're getting into to just kind of dial it up when you see and you're competing?
So for rowing, you can always do more. You can always be faster. In comparison to soccer, where it's like, oh, I had a bad game. It's okay. I'll play better next time. Or it's a different team. So you can't really like compare it as much. But with rowing, it's you see these numbers. This is what you got on this test. The next test, you have to do better. And you're going to. Or this next test, I want to do better than the girl that was sitting next to me. It's a lot of internal things. Rowing is probably the most mentally competitive sport I've ever done. A lot of it is just finding it in yourself to have that grit and wanting to push
yourself. It's so monotonous, right? It's like you're in one chair, you're sitting there, right? Obviously, when you're on the water, you're moving a little bit. But even on the erg, when you're training, you're just in there. And so internal makes a lot of sense. Do you have like a story or a time where you're just like, I'm in the chair and like, I'm grinding? Like, what's that internal dialogue that goes through your head? Do you break it up? How does that work for you?
Well, a lot of times for me, when we're racing, I black out.
Yeah, out.
In the beginning of the race, start of the race, it's like, it's chaos, it's crazy. And then you settle in and then it's like, you just snap into it and everything goes black. All you hear is your coxswain's voice telling you where you are, where the other boats are on you. And then you're at the finish line and it's like, what just happened? Like, I don't know how this happened, how we got here, because I don't remember it. It's a lot of tunnel vision, I think. But on the erg, I'm in my head a lot. It's a lot of, I'm pulling this number, but I should be pulling this, or what is my coach thinking? Am I not strong enough? Am I not fit enough to be finishing this workout? It's a lot of what ifs and what I should be, which is very difficult. You have to get out of that negative self-talk portion of it to be successful. And that's probably the hardest struggle with rowing for me, just that self-talk.
Now, is that something that you actively work on, or coaches working on this to shift out of that? Is this just on you as the athlete to try to just figure this out? What is that? Are there resources or tools, or is it something that each athlete has to kind of figure out and find on their own?
I think it's something that every rower struggles with. And I think everyone has different things that work for them. Me personally, for test pieces for our 2Ks, I like to break them up into 500s. So every 500 will be for a different person or a different goal that I have. I also have a playlist that helps out, and I have that in order so that I can tune into the playlist and try and kind of not focus on the numbers as much and just let whatever my body lets me do happen. A lot of it, I just kind of try to zone out as much, because if I focus on the numbers too much, I get in my head too much and then things just start to crumble. So I just try to find distractions.
Yeah, it's locking in on that process, right? Because that's all you can do is continue to focus on that process. And you know, if you're focused on those outcomes consistently, right, you can easily get in your head of like, okay, how much further do I have? And, you know, am I going strong enough, right? Versus continue to, you know, what is it? Legs, arms, pull. What is it?
So push with your legs, lean back, and pull your arms in.
push, lean, pull, and continue to just be in there for reps and on reps on reps. And you talked about breaking down a 2000. Is that like a typical race length or is it typical training length?
Yeah. So in the fall, we'll do 5Ks. So you'll take them at a slower pace. Mm-hmm. But in the spring, which is our main race season, we're at 2Ks, which is a very hard sprint.
You say you break it down into 500s. And I think that's important because, you know, when everybody is searching for goals or trying to achieve things, right? We've always talked about short-term goals or things you're trying to work down. So is that something that you discovered? Is this something that coaches like as a tip, like, or, you know, why is that helpful for you to break it down into that 500 to kind of more manageable chunks to get to that larger goal?
I think because on the race course, it's set into 500s. There's a different colored buoy for every 500 you reach. So on the erg, I naturally just associate it with a race. And in the race, so you'll do the first 500 is your start and you go, this is the hardest and the most unstable the boat will be at this time. And then you settle in. And then in that middle piece, which is the hardest part of the race for everybody, it's where you're reaching like that halfway, that peak, you think you're done, and then you still have another half to do. That's where we'll do a middle move, which is where you find it in yourself to just dig deeper. And we'll do like a power 10 or a power 20, which is just 10 or 20 super hard strokes, just to kind of keep you going and focus in. And then towards the end, you'll do like a focus 5. And then you'll do that. They call it blackout. And you'll just black out for the last like 100 meters of the race. And you go as hard and as fast as you can. So I think on the erg, I just try to replicate that. And instead of just doing the same thing for 2000 meters and just like moseying on, I find a way to just picture something and image a real life racing situation. And that helps to kind of like zone in on it.
Yeah. So there's some visualization of like what the race is actually going to be like. But I always enjoy like the little nuanced details when, you know, from an outsider of like, what's the strategy, right, that goes into it? Because I think from an outsider perspective, or if you've ever been on an erg before, it's just like, oh, like pull as hard as you can and continue to go and, you know, get really fatigued and tired and then collapse on the floor. Like, it seems like there's a lot more strategy involved than maybe an average person might know. And I always find that interesting to think about. Is that a typical, you know, rower's mentality? Is that something that's kind of built up? Is like, let's strategize. How do we want to work? This is going to be the most unstable the boat is going to be. Let's push here. Are you constantly going through that rep scheme, that strategy? Are you communicating that with your team? How does that work?
Yeah, everything with rowing is very calculated and strategic, like you said. So before races, we practice and practice and practice. And there's a lot of talking involved because during the race, the rowers, we can't speak at all. Like, you're so physically drained that there's no way you're able to mutter a word out. So the coxswain is more so like the brain of the operation.
Yeah, describe the coxswain just for people who don't know rowing that much.
So the coxswain is the person that steers the boat. They're usually smaller. They're the brains of it. They know everything about the race inside and out. They know the race course. They know the turns. They know the lane that they're staying in. They know what to say to keep you motivated or what's going to make you dig deeper at that middle move that you have. They're super important. A huge part for them is just knowing the rowers in your boat. So for some people, like, they don't want to be screamed at. And other people need like that angry, like, show them what you have, or this 10 is for this person, this 10 is for this person. And just knowing your rowers is really important in making the chemistry of the boat work better. And just that unspoken togetherness really work in a race.
It's interesting. Yeah, they tend to be like the lightest, the smallest person, right? But they're just kind of screaming, right? They encourage the pace, right? They're people to straighten out the boat. It's really interesting perspective too, because it really requires that flexibility. You know, there's a big psychological component, right? That person's like an onboard coach, almost like that captain that's shifting everybody and communicating. But I really like what you said of like, they have to know each person too. They really have to know the personalities of their people and be able to be flexible of like, hey, this person needs more intensive, aggressive communication, which is screaming, or also a little bit more kind of laid back encouragement. And that's interesting. Just kind of describe, are you rowing 8? Are you rowing 4, 2? What style of boat do you row?
So in college, we row in 8s and 4s. My freshman year, I was in the 4, which I really loved. I think 4s are super fun. But these past 2 years, I've been in the 8s.
What's the difference, like, in terms of mentality-wise when you're approaching a race between a 4 and an 8?
Well, for me, I know that because the four is a smaller boat, the race is going to take a little longer. And in my head, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be rowing even longer and it's more difficult. But at the same time, since there's less people in your boat, you're able to, I think, connect more and you're able to get together in an easier way and have the same mindset and just have a lot of feedback on the race. I think that's part of why I like four so much, just because you're able to really just the four of you get together and talk about it without, instead of eight different mindsets and eight different opinions, it's four. And usually you're on the same page and it works very smoothly.
Yeah, having that endurance mentality versus kind of power mentality, right? There's still kind of endurance in both capacities, but it's interesting when more people get involved, right? The more minds, right? The mind meld that has to occur as a result of that. So tell me a little bit about, I know you're at UConn now, congrats. What's that experience like? How do you end up at UConn as a rower from high school?
Well, when I first started searching for colleges, my mindset was, I want to go to a huge Southern school. I want to be in the warmth. I want to be able to row year round. And then life happens and I end up in Connecticut where the lake freezes in November. It's definitely different from other teams, just because the lake freezes super early and it stays frozen for a while. But thankfully, we're able to travel to Miami twice a year to be able to row and race during that time where the lake is frozen. A lot of it for us is that winter training is completely on the ergs, which at certain times can be super draining physically and mentally. You just get so tired of doing the same thing every day. And erging is so difficult on your body and people get injured and people get exhausted. And you see like the dark circles on everybody's eyes just because they're so tired. But definitely my teammates are awesome. We're all usually on the same page and we all know that like we're doing this together. And that's the important thing. Like we're all showing up for practice at 5 a.m. and we're all doing the same workout and we all have the same goal and end, which is to be able to compete at conference. So just to be able to have that group of people going through the same exact thing as you, you know, it's very comforting.
You talk about this shared goal. Does everybody approach it with the same mindset, or do you find just different people, different athletes have different mindsets, like trying to achieve that goal?
Well, with winter training, it's more individual because you're completely on the erg. It's your scores and your screen that you're looking at. So just being able to say every day, I'm going to come in and I'm going to do better than I did the day before. And if we're all on the same page, by the time we're in boats again in the spring, it's all going to come together perfectly and we're going to be able to compete.
So in 2020, UConn comes out and says, women's rowing is no longer going to be part of our program, our athletic program. Where are you? Where do you get this news? And what's that impact that it has on you in that moment?
I remember it was shortly after I graduated and we get an email from our coach saying the school is warning everybody that they may have to cut a few teams. But she thinks that we'll be fine because of Title IX. And she talked to whoever she needed to talk to and they said that we were going to be okay. And then fast forward a few months and I get another email from the school and it's announcing that we were cut. At that moment, I was kind of like in shock. It was like, no way, because we were told that this wouldn't happen to us. And then here we are and it's happening. It's also disheartening just because my college career was over before it could even really start. And I wasn't ready to be done rowing, especially because COVID-19 cut my senior season short. So I was really like, I only got 3 years to row and I expected to have a lot more than that. So a lot of my teammates were heartbroken. I would use the word heartbroken. And for my coach, it was shattering for her. She was losing her job that she's had for almost 30 years. Where do you go from then? So a group of us got together and ended up being 12 of us. And we found a Title IX sports lawyer, Felice Duffy, who's fantastic. She's so smart. And we ended up suing the school, suing the athletic department.
Wow.
Which was crazy because most of us were 18, 19 years old. And just to sue the school that you're going to is a crazy concept.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, how do you even get to that point? Okay, we're going to form a group. How do you get to that point?
It started off with, well, before we even thought about suing the school, it started off with just writing letters and emails and having meetings with the athletic directors and president, just trying to be like, please, this is not right. We know that because of Title IX, like, we have a right to be here. We deserve this. And it wasn't very responsive at first. So we just got frustrated and we reached out to the alumni. And the alumni were a huge help. They helped us find the lawyer. They helped fund. We held a protest and everything. And it ended up being that we found Felice and she's like, we're not sure if this is going to be an easy case because we can't see the numbers all the way. And I just have no idea if we're going to be able to win or lose this thing. And we were like, well, it's worth a shot. Like, if we win it, we get reinstated. And if we lose, then it stays the way that it is now. And we start a club team. So we start meeting with Felice, which was, it was a lot of work. It was, we met multiple times a week for a lot of hours. Felice did most of the work. It was more so just her asking us questions and how things would work and what we want out of this. And then come November, maybe, there's a court case and I get a text from Felice and she's like, hi, so we're going to have a court case in an actual courtroom and we have three people that are able to testify and I would like you to be one if you're able to.
So you're a freshman in college. You just got there. You haven't even rowed yet. And now you're going to be on the stand testifying as a freshman for a team you haven't even rowed for yet. That's an intense shift.
It was kind of scary just knowing that it was a federal courtroom. And I had never been to court because I'm 18, 19 at the time. And she's asking me to get in front of everyone and speak to the judge, speak to UConn's lawyers. And it was live streamed and everything. So that was just a lot of pressure. And I have no idea how cross-examining was going to work or what they would ask me and if I would say something wrong in front of everybody and hurt our case. But Felice was awesome. She practiced with me. She made sure I knew everything that I was supposed to say inside and out. And then after that, the judge for that case, he, what is it called? Oh, it's a temporary restraining order. He filed one for that. So that means basically that the team has to stay instated at the time until the entire case is finished. So we were able to be on the water. We were able to work out together and race for that year. And then there was a follow-up case, I believe. And that was when the judge kind of just decided this is right because the male athlete numbers at UConn are way up here and the female athlete numbers are down here, especially after you cut the rowing team. Because rowing was mostly used as a equalizer sport for football when it was first allowed to be a Division I sport. Just because football's numbers are so large, it throws off the whole balance between men and women's sports. And rowing is a big team. We have about 50 girls on our team. So it kind of 50? Helps that number. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that large. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So because of that, the judge was like, well, these girls deserve this. They did nothing wrong. They're working out. They're practicing just as hard as all these other teams. You're going to keep this team on campus. And the school was awesome. They were super respective of it. And since then, they've given us so many more opportunities to compete better. We've gotten speed coaches, which is like a little screen that's similar to the one on the erg, but you put it on your oar in the boat, and it gives you your split. It's very cool.
That's very cool, yeah.
And we also got a new dock, which is fantastic because our old one was falling apart at the seams. People were falling into the water. They were breaking through it and cutting their legs. It was a mess. So that was super awesome. They're renovating the field house, which is where our erg room is. And track and field also practices there and the swim team. So that's really awesome for everybody. We're getting new locker rooms and everything, new weight room. And they're also renovating our boathouse, which is super exciting because right now it's kind of like a little shed and there's holes in it everywhere. So mice and stuff get in the wintertime.
You go from this team that's about to be cut on life support to now, you know, it's great that the school is supporting you and backing you and giving you the resources that you deserve, honestly, right? Is that's pretty much what you had to fight for, is to kind of get what you deserved. Is that accurate?
Right, exactly. It's just, it was frustrating seeing football get like 20 pairs of socks and we get three, or football has these facilities with like their own cafeteria and these really cool lights in the locker room and speaker systems. And we barely have running water in our showers in the locker room. So after this lawsuit, it was just an amazing change for not even just the rowing team, but all the other sports. It's a huge jump and it's really exciting just to see how great the school is being with it and how they're listening to what we need and responding back with positive feedback and communicating with us the things that they plan on doing and when things are going to be done.
So what's the mentality now that, you know, you're now settled in, you're a junior now, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Junior now. So what is that looking like for you now? You kind of beat this challenge that's pretty monumentous, right? You've been an advocate for Title IX, an advocate for women in sport. That's pretty phenomenal. Just being as a junior in college. What's next? Like, where are you heading? What are your goals right now? What are you focused on?
Well, right now, I remember coming back after the team was reinstated and everyone's mindset was like, well, we're here now, we're back. Now we have to prove that we really, really deserve to be here. We have to show it on the race course. So it was really awesome to feel that same energy within everybody and just have that same mindset of like, we have to prove ourselves now. Like, they've given us everything we need to succeed and now we really have to do it. But we were still coming out of COVID at the time, so things were still a little difficult and shaky. But this year, the team is doing fantastic, which is super exciting to watch. Just last weekend at Head of the School Goal, our 1V got second place, which
nice.
I don't know if that's ever happened. And the whole team placed in the upper half, which is super exciting as well. I think my mindset and my drive is just to keep getting better and keep getting faster, because all of these people, including Felice and the athletic director and our coaches and the 11 other plaintiffs in the lawsuit, like, we put all this work in to be here. We might as well make it worthwhile now.
Absolutely, right? To have that drive, it's, you know, the UConn or the Huskies, and I'm thinking of the Phoenix, right? You guys are kind of rising out of these ashes and trying to kind of become new and stronger as a result of it. I think that takes a pretty intense mindset shift to try to kind of come back and be there. And sometimes you can be influenced by those external, but also I think pressure can come with that. Do you feel that pressure a little bit because you guys are like, we have to perform now. We now have these like speed coaches. We're getting these new docs. Like, is there additional pressure with that? Or is that more so like, okay, that's just helping us compete and we're just kind of in this mindset?
There was always that pressure to compete, but something was always holding us back. I don't know what that was. I don't know if it was a mentality just because we felt unappreciated by the school or by athletics. But after having all of these things and seeing all the work going into it, it's like, we feel like we owe it to everyone that helped us out. And the team is working harder than it's worked the 3 years that I've been here. And we're seeing it in the results in races. And it's just fantastic just being able to get together and have everyone with the same mindset and just that we want to win and we want to be thankful and show that we're grateful for everything Felice and the school did.
Yeah, that's great. Do you find when you're competing now that you have this new kind of drive and this new focus, not that you didn't have it before, right? You talked about you kind of always had this competitiveness. Do you have this mentality of when you set these goals, like, are you just constantly competing against yourself? Are you competing against, now that you're a junior, right? Do you feel pressure from beneath now as well to kind of continue to push yourself? Like, what is that like just from that, both the student athlete mentality, but just as an athlete mentality or a high performer mentality? I think there's always new people coming up and us trying to stay on top. So what's that like for you?
There's definitely pressure from all around. Last year, we had a super big walk-on class, which walk-on is like a big thing in the rowing world, just because you can only recruit so many girls and there's so much talent out there that like has no idea what rowing is. So sometimes all you have to do is introduce people to what rowing is and they're naturally fantastic at it. And that's how our walk-on class was last year. And they're mostly sophomores and juniors now. And they're very good. And it's awesome to see how they're growing and learning. But at the same time, it's like, oh my God, she's coming for my seat. Like, I need to get it together. And also through the lawsuit, we got a recruiting increase for the budget. So we were able to recruit more freshmen and be able to offer them. So we have international students now, which we haven't had in 3 years, which is exciting. We have a girl from Serbia. We have girls from Canada, which is very cool. And all of our freshmen are super good and they're super driven. So I think it's pushing the rest of the team as well, just because it's like, oh, I don't want to let a freshman take my seat. So it's always like pushing. It's pushing yourself and you're pushing each other. Rowing is just a huge team sport.
So how do you shift away from maybe that pressure or use that pressure, right, as a more of an energizer than maybe a demotivator? Like, what are the tools that you're using, at least for yourself, when you feel that pressure, when you recognize that? Because I think that is a natural pressure, right? us wanting to try to achieve our best, but also being mindful of the people who are rising up as well. What are you doing to kind of make that mental shift for yourself?
A lot of times I catch myself thinking about why I started rowing. One of my biggest dreams was always just to go and be a Division I athlete. And that wasn't going to necessarily happen with soccer. So when I found rowing, I was like, this is my outlet. This is how it's going to happen. And just working so super hard for it and getting to this point, sometimes I get like discouraged or I have a bad day and I have to remind myself why I started and how hard I've worked to get here and that I have to keep working in order to stay here. So it's just looking back on the beginning, basically, for me.
Going back to your roots, like, why is this valuable? Why is this important? We talk at times about mental fatigue, right? And I think you're familiar with this just kind of based on our discussions too in the past. Mental fatigue is that number one performance inhibitor, right? It's the thing that creates this lacking motivation or I'm lacking energy in a particular moment. And it makes things feel harder, right? Not necessarily that they are harder, but feel harder too. And as a student athlete, I think mental fatigue, we are not strangers to this, right? And having to get up at, what is it? You said you were in the water at 5 a.m., 5:30,
yeah.
Right? So mm-hmm. Is that an everyday thing? Are you getting up that early every day? Why does rowing do that? Why does rowing always do that so early? I guess maybe it's for the water space or whatever.
So a lot of it, into the season, you're going to hit a wall and it's going to be bad and you're just going to want to stay in bed all day and not get up and erg or row. And it's really difficult, but at the same time, you realize that all of your teammates are doing it and everyone's together. Well, at the same time, a lot of it for me is doing things for myself and remembering that I'm more than just an athlete. I like to read at night before I go to bed just to calm down. And I also, at the same time, there's a hill here on campus. It's called Horse Barn Hill. And it's basically just where they keep the cows and the horses and everything. And at the top, there's this gigantic hill. And it's the most amazing view. And it's very, very peaceful out there. So sometimes when I'm having a bad day or when I need a break or a reset, I'll go up there and I'll read or I'll just look up at the views. Our coach is a big supporter of yoga also. And I think yoga is fantastic. It gives you a chance to breathe during the day. And just remember, like, it's okay to take a second for yourself and allow yourself to calm down and not be running around all day long and just relax and have time for yourself to do things that your body needs and realize that maybe you should go to the training room after this and get physically recovered.
Yeah, I always find that yoga interesting because it's supposed to be all about non-judgment. And then I always find myself when I'm in there, you know, at 6'8", like I'm not the most balanced person. Like I can do it, I can hold it. But like when people are doing like headstands and stuff like that, I'm like, you know, oh, why can't I do that? And it becomes a very internal like judgment, but it's supposed to be a very non-judgmental stance. And I like yoga because it encourages me to try to shift away from that. Do you ever find that yourself, like just yoga being that way?
Yeah, our instructor, Angie, her voice is so calming. It's kind of funny, but it's just so nice to hear her speak. And we'll do these hard poses sometimes where you're literally just balancing on your forearms and your legs are like on your triceps and it's like, it doesn't make sense, but some people are doing it and you're looking around, and you're like, oh, I can't do this, but she can do it. And then Angie always speaks up and is like, just focus about yourself. Don't worry about what anyone else is doing. Like your body is telling you what you need to do and what it wants to do is what's happening. So not to worry about it and just worry about yourself. And it's really nice to hear her just calm us down and just be like, this is here for you. It's here for you to recover and relax. It's not a competition.
Great to have that external, right? That external coach almost to tell us those things. And I think if we can internalize those aspects of ourselves as well, right? When we hear those lessons to, okay, like I'm recognizing people are strong or there's goals that I want to achieve. But if I can shift that from that external focus back to the internal focus of things that are, I'm sticking with that process, not just focusing on the outcome, as we mentioned, right? I think that allows us to get to higher levels, right? It allows us to lock in, right? Especially like when it comes to balance, if you're focusing all around, like instead of let's just really lock in on, you know, focusing on my forearms touching the ground and its surface area, there's just an intentionality with that that allows you to sustain that balance. It actually makes you more effective by focusing, right? Sometimes on that experience versus that judgment and making that shift. You know, I saw that you were part of the Junior Olympic Development Team. when did this come about? How is this, still going, or what's that goal? Like, I know rowing, right? Is there a professional rowing? I'm not sure, but like, I know Olympics tends to be pretty big for a rowing division. So, you know, what does that look like in terms of just trajectory for people? Maybe yourself too.
So the next level for rowing would to be to go to the Olympics, because there's no professional rowing. But I got the email, I think it was my sophomore year of high school, where they were showing interest and they were like, oh, come out to our camp and we would love to see if you could qualify to go farther with us. And at the time, I was still kind of fighting the whole rowing thing just because I was really stubborn about soccer. So I never fully followed through on it, but it's something that I regret now, just because it would have been a fantastic learning experience. I would have met so many people, made a lot of connections in that world. And maybe if I stuck with it, I would be going to the Olympics, who knows? But it's just a great opportunity. I think if anybody is able to get there, I think that they should take it, because it's something that I wish I did take.
Very similar. I did a training at the Colorado Olympic Training Center by invite. And it was similar, but I think it's a valuable experience. I am not in the Olympics. I did play against a bunch of people who are in the Olympics, and I'm sure you'll know some of the rowers who are in the Olympics coming up as well, which is exciting to know, like, oh, I've competed against these people, or even if you've won against those people at times, right? There's a good feeling with that. But I think there's a lot of insight, you know, as you climb the ranks of higher performers, just a different level of insight and mindset. I think that's required at those different levels. You know, what would you say to our audience? What mindset do you think you need, not just to compete in rowing, but just like as a high performer on a day to day? Like, what's the mindset that you think helps you or supports you to try to achieve your goals or be at your best? What do you think those either tangibles or intangibles that you need are when it comes to mentality?
I think mentality wise, you have to remember that you're more than an athlete, and your life doesn't have to completely revolve around the sport that you do, even though you're always watching what you're eating. You're making sure you're sleeping right. You're making sure you're recovering correctly and making sure you're getting up for practice and performing your best at practice. A big part of it is just taking a deep breath and stepping outside of all that and just allowing yourself to be, quote unquote, a normal person. I think a big part of the mentality of it is that you don't want it to swallow you whole. You want it to be with you. You want to be hand in hand with the struggle and the process of it all, and just learn to be grateful for it all, because it's not something that a lot of people get to experience. So just being grateful and acknowledging that it's amazing that you're able to compete at this level and be around the people that you're around and create the connections that you're connecting. I think just being able to be more so in the present, which is something that I realized I haven't been. I'm always worrying about class after practice, or did I get enough sleep, or am I doing the right thing at practice? I'm not happy with the boat that I'm in. Like, what can I do, or what should I be doing to move? But somebody suggested to me recently that I do like a sensory thing. So it's like 5 things you can see, 4 things you can hear, and all that. And I think that's super helpful. And that was great advice, just because I did it the other
day. Yeah, don't brush over that. What is that again? Just describe that, right? Just in case somebody's out there and listens and wants to take that in. What are you doing? So it's 5 sensory things. Just describe that.
Right. So it's like 5 things you see, 4 things you hear, 3 things you feel, 2 things you smell. And you just stop where you're at and you assess this, and it helps you be more present. I realized that I haven't been very present at practice. So I think it was yesterday, I sat down and we were waiting in the boat to get instruction for what we're doing next. And I'm looking around and I'm like, okay, I feel the seat underneath of me. I feel the water splashing up. I can hear my coach. I hear the motor on her launch. I hear my coxswain talking. And I'm looking up and I see a shooting star go by, which was really cool.
Wow.
I was like, oh, yeah, God, a shooting star. So that was very cool. It also allowed me to just be more present. And we had a pretty good row that day. So I think it just helps me to zone in a way and just be at practice and take one stroke at a time.
Yeah, mental is very intentional, right? I think we sometimes think and take that for granted, because physically we do a lot of things to warm it up intentionally, right? We do stretches, we do some, you know, brief movements, right, to really get it warm and ready to perform. But I think our mind, we don't always necessarily engage with in an intention. And so that you have a tool to use to really give yourself a mental warm-up, I think is critical. And I think anybody who's out there and listening too, I think that's important to think about if it's before a speech or if it's before a performance or if it's before just a difficult conversation, to kind of mentally warm yourself up, I think could be critical to just increasing the likelihood that you're going to have a better performance, right? There's never a guarantee. You know, some of the, two of the things that I really like that you said too, for that mentality of a high performer is, you know, being grateful. I think being grateful for what you have is always incorporated into being a high performer because you need to recognize where you are. But it's not being always satisfied with where you are, but it's still, I'm grateful for what I have. I'm going to continue to use that to continue to grow, I think is great. And then also leaning into that pressure a little bit, as you said, you know, leaning into that strain, not moving away from it. So I want to thank you for being on the podcast today. I'm excited to follow your journey in this season. And if people are listening and want to go out and support UConn women's rowing, I think they would appreciate that. And thanks so much, Bailey, for being on this.
Thank you so much for having me.